Before I even get into the intro, I think it is important that I establish that I do not really completely understand this topic. This has to deal with multivariable calculus, which I do not know yet at all. I am currently in pre-calc. I'm a sophomore in high school, and we are talking about Hilbert space in Calc 3, which I will not be taking until at the best senior year, if not freshman year of college. So it is unlikely that I will be able to explain this in great detail. It is unlikely that I will be able to explain it correctly. So as usual, I have included a significant number of links in the description that will give you a better interpretation of Hilbert space, especially if you are more knowledgeable than I am. Probably a fair amount of you are, because you're going out and learning about stuff like this anyways. So that's my disclaimer. That's basically my disclaimer. I don't have much knowledge on this. I'm young. I have very little knowledge on calculus. I've only done limits and some differential equations. I haven't even started with vectors. The only thing I know is an eigenvector. The only thing I know is Hilbert space. I have never set up an integral in my entire life. I have never integrated. I have never done a differential equation with like trig identities. I've never done anything crazy. So this is a new kind of episode to me. So just bear with me on all of this, of course. And I'll probably make some edits in the description if worst comes to worst. And I realize that I made a significant error, and I have before. Go back to one of my previous episodes. I know for a fact that I mentioned error in great detail. I do the same on some of my YouTube videos. So yeah, but anyways, let's get into this. Before writing the prompt for this chapter, I'd initially planned on following the Here's What Astronomers Discovered in the Month of Whatever precedent. I had established the month before, but then I really changed my mind. I changed my mind there. While I was planning on writing this one based on what astronomers obviously discovered in the month of February, I found yet a million more interesting astronomical, quantum mechanical, and astrophysical topics that needed to be discussed and needed to be learned by myself. In the week preceding the formulation of the prompt surrounding the discoveries that occurred in February, I discovered at least 6 new concepts that I thought needed to be discussed. As a result, I decided to suppress the mentioning of these discoveries in order to explain the paradigms I discovered over the last week. I don't know if I'm going to continue with the Here's What Astronomers Discovered in Insert Month, but I would like to continue it. I've not made my decision yet, but I think I probably will. Maybe I'll do it every 3 months, because I really want to get enough episodes in from other things. I don't want a fourth of my episodes to be the same thing. But anyways, some notable examples outside of obviously this episode of nodes, podcast episode nodes that I came up with include supersymmetry, which I actually discovered upon taking a test in my Earth and my astronomical sciences class, in which selectron was an answer to the question. Being the curious person I am, I looked up what a selectron was. They told me that a selectron did not exist, and then I found an S fermion or spermion, and proved them wrong, because apparently a selectron does exist. It's just a supersymmetry version of the electron, which we will discuss in the next episode. Hopefully, after researching this episode, everything in quantum mechanics seems easy to me. But yeah, along with an in-depth explanation of quarks and also the explanation of the Doppler effect. So these are pretty basic topics. Supersymmetry is not basic, but the Doppler effect and quarks are definitely pretty basic. The interesting thing about both this chapter and the subsequent chapter on supersymmetry is that I have absolutely no background knowledge on either of the topics. In previous difficult concepts that were covered, I had background knowledge, though of course limited, surrounding these difficult concepts. But with these, I have absolutely none. Even so, I'm very excited to say that we are going to set our toes in new waters. In this episode, we will be discussing and covering Hilbert space and its importance in quantum mechanics, science, mathematics, physics, all that crazy stuff. We'll also include the history. Please cut me some slack, though, because this topic combines abstract algebra with advanced calculus, both of which I do not know. Not really abstract algebra, but it's mainly calculus, almost entirely calculus, not quite, but getting there. The history of Hilbert space and the application of it into quantum mechanics is not too difficult, but it's still upon seeing the Wikipedia page, still pretty difficult, because the history of Hilbert space has very little to do with the history of Hilbert space, and more like how to solve mathematical equations. In this episode, we'll be covering some crazy stuff. I can just tell you right now that its application and derivation surrounding mathematics will likely stump me. Like, I know the English language.
Don't know what that was.
That was my computer. I know the English language, but not integrals and multivariable vector calculus. So I don't really know that much when it comes to calculus, and this is all calculus. But anyways, let's explore the foundation of something I do not understand, and the foundation of quantum mechanics, Hilbert space. Before we get into the history of the development of Hilbert space, let me just say that even the history itself is difficult to understand. I knew I would write something like this. I've always been able to understand quantum mechanics, not easily, but easily compared to how bad it could be. Still, this is not the same. I've always been able to understand quantum mechanics pretty well because I actually have a physicist friend who explains it to me pretty well. Physicist friends, actually, who can explain quantum mechanics, explain astrophysics to me in great detail, and allow me to explain it myself and also create episodes off it. And also, there are a lot of YouTube videos out there, I'll tell you that. That's basically what it is. But with generalizations of a Euclidean space, which is what Hilbert space is, I completely blanked. The history is profound and rich, but requires a significant amount of background knowledge, all of which we will discuss in this chapter, of course. Euclidean space, to start off, really, though, Euclidean space is the fundamental space of geometry, a class most of you probably took in either middle school or high school. I was lucky enough to take it in middle school. And by far my most unfavorite math class ever. Not because it was difficult, but because I hate geometry. I do not like geometry. I like calculus and I like algebra. I hate. I know hate is a strong word, but I hate geometry. Euclidean space is characterized, or at least was characterized for a majority of its existence, by a three-dimensional space characterized by x, y, and z coordinates. I'm sure everyone knows this. This is basically just a recap. Euclidean space is essentially a two or three or finite dimensional coordinate system in which a point in each Euclidean space contains a value for all dimensions. So I like to think of the Cartesian coordinate system, which I always used to mispronounce as Artesian coordinate system. I think a lot of people made that mistake, but I definitely have myself, which derives from Euclidean space, of course. It's the graph that we've always used. When working with the function f of x equals x squared, very simple, simple function. In this simple function, each point is defined by an x and a y coordinate. Obviously, the x coordinate is the square root of the y coordinate, and the y coordinate is basically the x squared of the x coordinate, basically. When x equals 1, essentially y equals 1. When x equals 40, y equals 1600. When x equals 25, y equals 625. When x equals 17, when x equals 19, y equals what, 381? I think that's right. Is it right? 19 times 20, 380. Yeah, that 361, 19 times 19 is 361. I was close, but not quite, of course. That's what happens when you try to do math in your brain. But anyways, the Cartesian coordinate system can also apply to 3D systems in which values of x, y, and z are defined as parameters. Even when we go to the calculus, vectors are often expressed in three-dimensional Euclidean space. Vector applications to Euclidean space is often known as the vector space. These new topics are foundational to the development of Hilbert space. Hilbert space is a type of vector space, so there you go. But it's not necessarily three-dimensional. That's the big thing. The vector space is not necessarily three-dimensional. It can be an infinite number of dimensions. And that's basically how it works. It's just infinitely dimensional. The first generalization of Euclidean space, known as the vector space, began to gain some mathematical traction in the late 19th century, so not that long ago. The vector space is known as a space whose elements can be added together or multiplied by scalars, which is often identified in physics and mathematics as a quantity that has magnitude and potentially a unit of measurement, but is defined by no other characteristics. So, there are billion, billion, trillion, trillion types of examples of this. I think speed, I think, let's see, there's speed, there's weight, mass, mass, volume. But then there's also the vectors. Vectors are obviously the, like, acceleration, velocity, all that. But anyways, think of the three-dimensional space that exists in most Euclidean spaces. Each x, y, or z coordinate is a scalar quantity, and the application of these scalar quantities identifies a vector, which has both magnitude and direction. They basically are characterized as a ray. Like, we know what a ray is. Basically, at least from what I've seen, most vectors are rays. They originate at the origin, generally. 0, 0, of course. X equals 0, y equals 0, or even z equals 0, or alpha equals 0. Basically, as far as it goes, as far of dimensions as it goes, and progresses out to infinity, basically. That's essentially what it is. That's what a ray is. That's what a vector is. Examples of scalar quantities in physics include the basic units of measurement. We already discussed this. And examples of vectors in physics include measurements that would likely be characterized by a ray, like anything that has magnitude and direction, so like acceleration, velocity, force, like anything that can be characterized by, like, by an actual function. They're not characterized by a quantity, but rather by a function. So, like, obviously, something, I mean, vector is not necessarily characterized by a function, but I like to think of, like, half of a parabola, which is fx equals x squared. If you think of half of the parabola in a way that might be a vector, I'm not sure about that. Or even, like, y equals x squared plus, or no, x plus 4. Like, y equals x plus 4 when x is greater than or equal to 0. Or y equals x when x is greater than or equal to 0. Boom. Like, something like that. As this revolution occurred within the math field surrounding the evolution of the generalization of the Euclidean system, which we have been using for over 2 millennia, subsequent developments in the mathematical field resulted in the discovery, the first discovery, and incorporation of Hilbert space into mathematics and physics. When two mathematicians by the name of David Hilbert and Erhard Schmidt were studying integral equations, because that's what mathematicians do. They just study insanely difficult and insanely logical mathematical theorems. They discovered that, and I have to quote this because I do not fully or even slightly understand what is being portrayed here. Two square integrable real valued functions f and g go on an interval a, b, have an integral product. The two mathematicians essentially discovered that square integrable functions can be considered points in the vector space that is equivalent to the now well-known Hilbert space. As time passed by, the Hilbert space began to gain some traction in academia, but it was not until 1929 that John von Neumann, the legendary mathematician that most people probably know, coined the term Hilbert space, of course after the mathematician David Hilbert. The discovery of Hilbert space led to many profound discoveries and applications, including functional analysis, which is the study of mathematical analysis that deals with what are known as functionals, which are essentially functions of functions. Not going to try to explain that, and can be applied to not only functions, but both numbers and vectors as well. In physics, these infinite dimensional fields are used in everything that we'd characterize as vector space, so like velocity, acceleration, or in quantum mechanics with wave functions, and subsequently, everything. Most operations in calculus-based physics revolve around Hilbert space. All physics should be calculus-based. Many of the chapters of this series, including 23, 18, 19, 16, and 6, revolve around Hilbert space because of its obvious importance in quantum mechanics. Think of it, like, even the physics of black holes derive from vectors in Hilbert space. Of course, this is a mathematical concept, and there's a debate between whether mathematics is, some of the more advanced portions of it are human-made or scientifically made. But it certainly leads us to the correct answer, so it obviously has to mean something. Maybe we are altering it in some way that allows us to get it into the correct answer, but honestly, I'm not knowledgeable enough on that topic to have an opinion, so I still believe that math is almost completely important and gets us to the right answers because it simply does, but I cannot tell you that it isn't, that the concepts are not human-made. Because I seriously just don't know if they are or not. But ever since its discovery, it has been used and improved by various mathematicians and physicists. For example, in the 1930s, the mathematician John von Neumann investigated the use of rings, which is abstract algebra, one of the basics of abstract algebra, and my math teacher got a D+ in that apparently, so not excited for abstract algebra. But that'll be an interesting class. But that's where abstract algebra fits into the Hilbert space. He used it essentially in abstract algebra in Hilbert space in response to the fact that observables in quantum mechanics exist as an algebra of operators on a Hilbert space according to Werner Heisenberg's principle of matrix mechanics in quantum theory, which we discussed in episode number 18. The Werner Heisenberg matrix mechanics thing is extremely important. It is one of the first, it's one of the first mathematically feasible and mathematically correct establishments in the creation of quantum mechanics. So it is certainly a very extremely important concept that I highly suggest that you search up. While the history of Hilbert space is not as interesting and profound and easy to understand as was the history of entanglement, or even more notably so, the Copenhagen interpretation, it was certainly filled with majestic quantum mechanical wonders and mathematical prodigies. Hilbert space is essentially a mathematical concept that is not as easily explained in English as it is explained in math, so it looks like we will attempt to explain Hilbert space at least somewhat in terms of mathematics. I will do best to explain it in terms of English, though, because I have not yet even begun calculus. Outside of doing some of AP Calc AB online, and Hilbert space relies heavy on integrals and differential equations and multivariable calculus, none of which I have learned in depth. Literally the only thing I've learned, even the basics, is essentially the derivative. The derivative is essentially the slope at a very specific instantaneous point. It has everything to do with instantaneous, like what is happening at this particular moment. But even that is insanely basic. That is a very, very basic interpretation of derivatives, because it gets a lot worse than that. And I've seen it because I had no idea how to understand that, because I haven't even done trig identities yet. So, well, we've just begun it. So I wasn't able to answer any of them, but I'm really excited to learn about that dy over dx kind of stuff, the derivatives. They're going to be fun. Hilbert space is a mathematical paradigm that exists seemingly as an extension of the general Cartesian and Euclidean systems, extending from 2- to 3-dimensional planes to infinite dimensional planes. I have no pictures or graphics by which I can explain this mathematically because this is a podcast, so I will merely explain it as graphically as I can through words. If I were you, I suggest that you learn calculus before you listen to the rest of this, because it gets very heavy on calculus. It took me about 6 hours to research for this. I woke up at 9 and I finished it at 9 a.m. and I finished it at 3 p.m. This is on a weekend, and I already had 1,000 words done. I already had 1,000 words. My normal document is 2,700 words long. This was 2,700 words long. So, yeah, this took a long time. And normally it only takes me 3 or 4 hours to make one of these, because I get on a roll. Like, I kind of get on a roll. I love to write, and this was just really hard to understand. Like, most of my time in going into these episodes is basically determined by how easy the subject is and how much I know about the subject. I like to not know much about the subject, because that means I have to do more research and understand it more, and that's why I go into these crazy topics. But this one was different because I spent a lot of time working on this. So anyways, let's get into this. Imagine a vector in the Cartesian plane. There are two rays in quadrant 1 of the plane, which are expressed by x and y. The first vector has coordinates of x1, x2. And the second vector has coordinates of y1, y2. You can find the vector dot product of the two vectors by either multiplying x1 by y1 and adding that to the product of x2 and y2, or by multiplying the absolute value of the magnitude of both vectors x and y by cosine of theta, and meaning the angle between the two vectors. In this case, and in most cases, theta represents the angle at the origin, which is the point from which both vectors intersect with one another. These vectors live within the Cartesian coordinate system, or the two-dimensional system. Now, if you were to expand these two vectors into the Hilbert space, instead of the two-dimensional Cartesian system that the vectors had previously been present in, the vectors would be present in an nth, and n being any integer, dimensional paradigm. And paradise. The Hilbert space is simply a generalization of the three-dimensional Euclidean space that characterizes it in an infinite number of dimensions. In the vectors we shared earlier, the x vector would have coordinates with n scalars, so instead of merely x1 and x2, or in Euclidean space x1, x2, x3, there may be x1, x2, x3, x4, x5, and so on. Now you guys understand, like, I know you guys were probably confused when I did x1, x2, and y1, y2, instead of, like, y1, y1, y2, y2. There's a reason. There's a big reason, and it has everything to do... It has everything to do with the dimensions. So, essentially, this can occur until the nth dimension, or until infinity. Dot products have a lot to do with vectors. So, yeah. Hilbert space is essentially a direct analogy of an infinite dimensional Euclidean space. It is pretty much the same thing. Not quite, but similar. The Hilbert space is essentially a vector space, which we know is a set of vectors that is closed under a finite set of addition and multiplication of scalars, the building blocks of vectors, of course. This vector space has a dot product, which we discussed earlier, that provides a distance function. The most interesting fundamental node of Hilbert space is the fact that it contains infinite sequences of real numbers. Think of the vector in three-dimensional Euclidean space, whose coordinates are x1, x2, x3. Now, with the Hilbert space, push the x1, x2, x3 to x infinity. Basically, just establish x infinity. But now you guys understand what the dot product is. That's basically the basics of multivariable calculus. It's something that I could even do examples of. It was not difficult. And that's multivariable calculus. So we get to learn about some crazy stuff as we get moving into the craziness of calculus. And I know most people don't even take Calc 3. I think everyone should take Calc 3. Math is the fundamental language of the universe. We should all know it in depth. Hilbert space is obviously very wacky, though. Looking at it through mathematically, you have to have a lot of background knowledge. You have to understand integrals. You have to understand differential equations. You have to understand vectors at least somewhat to be able to even understand the Hilbert space. And obviously, it's a wacky topic because I don't understand any of that pretty much. I had to basically learn all of that. I had to learn what an integral was. I had to learn what advanced differential equations were. I had to learn what partial differential equations were. I had to learn what freaking dot products were. I had to learn what vector. Well, I knew what vectors were. I learned about what multivariable calculus was. I had to learn that the Cartesian system is not the Artesian system. I don't know why I ever called it the Artesian system, but it requires a significant amount of background knowledge to be able to understand this topic. But I think it's also important that we understand that it has some significant applications in quantum mechanics and science itself. Hilbert space is literally everywhere in quantum mechanics. It is literally the foundation of quantum mechanics. For example, there is this integral that is extremely important in the realms of quantum mechanics. Oh, this is the worst one of them all. No, it's not. It's not too bad. But we have a big function that's coming up, and it deals with integrals. This equation represents a wave function, and we know what the wave function is pretty well. There are many different wave functions, of course, but this equation specifically is one of those wave equations, which is essentially the foundation of quantum theory and the foundation of the Copenhagen interpretation, and the foundation, literally, one of the variables, technically, you could call it, specifically psi, of the Schrodinger wave equation. Probably one of the most difficult equations to answer. So let's just get into it. This equation is the integral of negative infinity to the power of infinity of the absolute value of f of x squared times the derivative of x, which equals 1. And now I assume this is going to be a sine graph. It just seems to me like a sine graph. I graphed into my calculator and it looked like a sine graph, so it has to be that. Let's break this up to explain this long function. The absolute value of f of x squared is known as the probability density function, which is essentially a function whose value at any given point can be assumed as providing a probability that the value at any given point can be assumed, or the value of the random variable would equal the point. I put a link down this in the description that better explains it. There are a lot of pretty decent examples, like it's point like 0.0002%, or like 0.0002. Multiply that by 100, and you have the percentage chance of you getting such a variable. There are some better examples than my own examples. The rest of the function is relatively simple. It is simply the integral of negative infinity to the infinite power of the probability density function of the derivative of x, which all of which equals 1. And I'm thinking the infinity, negative infinity to the infinite power has to do with the Hilbert space itself. Now, I'm not really sure about this because I don't know anything about integrals, and I've never integrated before in my entire life, so we will have to wait on that. But again, I left a link down in the description that covers this as well, so we will have, there's a lot of resources for you guys to prove me wrong. When entering this wave function or any other wave function into the Schrodinger wave equation, you will be able to express it as a sine or cosine graph. I'm pretty sure it's mainly a sine graph because it's a linear or partial differential equation. After solving the Schrodinger wave equation for that particular wave function, you will be able to determine the behavior of a quantum system in a force field. And a force field, most people think of force fields and think of superheroes and all that crazy stuff, but in physics we think about it as a vector field in which a force acts upon a particle or an object in space. Even the force field exists in a vector field, which again is synonymous with Hilbert space. Hilbert spaces are not only used in quantum mechanics, but in the entirety of physics, especially recently, because obviously it wasn't discovered until quite recently. And we've had physics for a good 300 years, well over 300, more like 400 years. Actually, probably even more than that, because even Galileo thought of kinematics, but calculus-based physics, we've had that for a pretty long time. Hilbert spaces are important. Obviously, they're used with the scalars, they're used with everything. They're like, think of all the vectors, like acceleration, velocity, force, all that, force fields, everything has to do with the vector field, and the vector field is basically the Hilbert space. It deals with the Hilbert space. These can be drawn out in the infinite dimensional Hilbert space, of course. Hilbert spaces essentially arise naturally in any situation in which an infinite dimension function space may exist, and physics is always where it will land. We've had 88 dimension. We've had nine-dimensional planes before, and we have not understood them. So, obviously, physics has everything to do with everything. obviously, Hilbert space is not an easy topic. I would say that this was the most difficult podcast episode that I've ever had to make, especially considering I know for a fact that I made at least a few errors in understanding this. Anyways, Hilbert space is essentially an infinite dimensional vector space that was discovered as a generalization of Euclidean space, the fundamental geometric three-dimensional space that many of us have utilized throughout our lives. Hilbert space is analogous with an infinite dimensional Euclidean space where the summation of all the coordinates of our particular vector always converges to a finite number. This is not surprising, not too difficult. Hilbert space has many applications in mathematics and physics, and in quantum mechanics, of course. It is responsible for the wave function and the rise of quantum mechanics itself. It can be said that quantum mechanics exists because of our discovery and understanding of Hilbert spaces and vector spaces. Considering quantum mechanics is indirectly responsible for 25% of the global economy, this is quite significant. Hilbert space is heavy on advanced calculus and other abstract mathematical applications that I've yet to understand, so of course I suggest that you dive into the links in the description so that you can better understand this topic, hopefully even better than I do, which I don't understand it that well, so there's a pretty low curve here. Anyways, to conclude, I've always had a deep interest in Hilbert space. In the last 5 or 6 months, I've been watching Sean Carroll, the most well-known academic proponent of the many worlds interpretation. Every amateur promotes the many worlds interpretation without knowing what it actually is, and his lectures at Caltech. In these lectures, almost everything Carroll discussed with us was expressed within the terms of the Hilbert space. Literally, the first one I ever went on, the first thing he said was Hilbert space, and I was like, oh god. So I had trouble understanding and following along with most of what he said. I mainly tuned into the streams to get exposed to the English of quantum mechanics, as it is not only an interesting node in many of these chapters, but it is also one of the fields, if not the field, I will be studying in not only college, but in career. The study I did on Hilbert space proved to me that there is yet so much to learn about quantum mechanics. And even as I arrogantly propagate my knowledge on quantum mechanics to my peers and you all, my knowledge is merely a tiny speck in the vast quantum mechanical light. I'm not going to say dark because I'm not pessimistic. Half full, not half empty, or all full because there's air in there as well. Quantum mechanics combines advanced calculus, trigonometry, algebra, and many other mathematical paradigms, and I have covered only algebra and basic, and I mean unit circle and trig identities basic trigonometry. There's yet a long way to go in our pursuit of sizable knowledge on quantum mechanics. I'm almost positive that I made some significant errors in my understanding of Hilbert space when making this episode, so of course I encourage you again to explore them through the links down in the description and discover all there is to know on the pillars of Hilbert space, the most well-known generalization of Euclidean space, and the foundation of multivariable calculus and quantum mechanics. Anyways, thank you all for listening, and as always, have a good morning, afternoon, evening, and night. Take care and stay curious.